This podcast was recorded Thursday, November 2nd at 12:13 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like we'll finally finish off all that candy we collected after a snowy Halloween left us with a huge surplus. Enough with the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and Smarties already. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who evolve on their positions as election day nears. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, a preview of a brand new podcast, a special WOSU podcast that tells the story of Snollygosters on steroids. That, of course, is the Larry Householder scandal. But first, this is it, the final weekend before Ohio's crucial election day. We are just days away from November 7th, when voters will decide two controversial issues here in Ohio. Issue one would enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution. Issue two would legalize marijuana for fun for all adults in Ohio. Of course, issue one is getting the most attention. It's the only abortion-related ballot issue in the country this year, so the eyes of the nation are on Ohio. And lessons learned here will influence other votes in other states around the country. Here in Ohio, the big question is, what if? What if issue one passes, and what if issue one fails? And this week, we discuss the scenarios with Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler.
You know, what if really is at the heart of this campaign. It's at the heart of the arguments of both sides. Supporters say, if issue one fails, the state will revert back to the so-called heartbeat abortion law, which bans abortion once fetal activity is detected, roughly 6 weeks into a pregnancy. Opponents say if issue one passes, parents could lose a say in their children's reproductive health care decisions. They argue abortions would be permitted at any time in a pregnancy. Both of those arguments, particularly the later term abortion one, are misleading. So let's start with the status of the law as of right now, Karen.
Well, the six-week abortion ban is currently on hold. It's been heard in the Ohio Supreme Court on a more technical issue. They're not dealing with the merits of the ban. They're dealing with who has standing to sue and some other issues. And so the idea that somehow the Ohio Supreme Court will uphold the ban based on what it is a little bit, that's not the exact thing here. But if the legal hold is removed, then the ban could go back into effect if issue one fails. And so that is the thing that supporters of issue one are pointing out, that the existing state law that's currently on hold would ban abortion after 6 weeks with no exceptions for rape or incest, though there are exceptions for the life of the woman.
Yes. So, and you have to, the Supreme Court now is firmly conservative. Is there any indication to believe that on the merits of the challenge, that the heartbeat law is unconstitutional according to the state constitution, is there any indication that this Supreme Court would agree with the challengers of the law, that it is unconstitutional, and then throw it out?
Well, what we know about the four Republicans on the Ohio Supreme Court, they are all strongly identifying as pro-life. Three of them made statements when they were up for re-election and election that said that they believe that life begins at conception. So that's what we know. Obviously, Joe Dieters, he was involved in, he's our newest Ohio Supreme Court justice appointed to the court in January. And he was involved in the case that actually resulted in the six-week ban being on hold because it came from Hamilton County. So I'm loath to predict what the Ohio Supreme Court might do, but that's what we know.
And he's recused himself from this case and been replaced by somebody who is firmly opposed to abortion rights.
That is correct, yes.
So that's where we are right now. Right now, though, the old abortion law, the 2022 week law, is in effect.
Yes, that was the law signed by John Kasich in 2017, and that does ban abortion after viability.
Yep.
And so that is the law that's currently in effect. And that's something that issue one opponents are pointing out, that right now the law is 22 weeks, and that's correct. But if issue one fails, there's a very strong possibility that the six-week ban will be the one that will prevail eventually.
And we don't know for sure, but the thinking is that the Supreme Court has sort of put the brakes on deciding this until voters have their say next week.
Well, and in all fairness, I mean, the Supreme Court just heard the case, mm-hmm. what, a couple of weeks ago, which was interesting for that case to come out and be heard at the time that voters are actually getting ready to early vote then. So I think it would be a tall order for the Ohio Supreme Court to come out with something in the next week.
Yeah, that would, I could not imagine that that would just blow everything up. I think courts generally like to let the voters have their say first, legislature do their thing first before they get involved in the for the most part. So what happens if issue one passes? It's an amendment. So it doesn't change state law right away.
Right. And that's, I think, a really interesting question, because when you look at, for instance, the Attorney General's legal analysis, and this is really unusual, Republican Attorney General Dave Yost did legal analyses for both Issue 1 and Issue 2, which is very unusual, and he's opposed to both of them. He said he assigned teams of lawyers and staff members to do the individual analyses, and the Issue 1 analysis says that there are several laws that would be affected if Issue 1 did pass, for instance, the ban on abortion after a Down syndrome diagnosis. But it also says in there that it does not address parental consent. Mm-hmm. And so certainly the idea that parental consent would be challenged, I mean, it's lawsuits are possible over that. But the idea that parental consent laws would fall immediately, the Attorney General says that's not the case here. And if you want to look to an example, a living example, so to speak, Michigan passed abortion rights and reproductive rights amendment last year. And while there are abortion rights advocates who are saying that all of the laws related to abortion, including parental consent, need to fall, that is not the package that they are considering right now in Michigan. Parental consent laws, there's no effort to try to overturn those there.
You have to figure those who support abortion rights would immediately challenge the so-called heartbeat law, the cardiac activity ban, even though it's on hold. They would challenge that. Perhaps challenge the waiting period and the transfer agreement requirement that clinics have to have relationships with hospitals in case of emergencies. Those would be the first targeted, probably, right?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly opens the door for opponents of those laws to challenge them in court, because the whole Dobbs decision was about sending the decision to regulate abortion back to the states. And so if the state votes to uphold abortion rights, then that opens the door for these lawsuits. The question, too, is whether Issue 1 restores what Ohio had at Roe versus Wade, or, as the Attorney General's legal analysis says, it goes further than that, and mm-hmm. that's going to be what we'll see here if Issue 1 passes.
And that's going to be up to lawmakers in courts.
It'll be up to the courts, essentially, because that's one thing. Lawmakers cannot change Issue 1.
The amendment. They
cannot change the amendment, though there have been some lawmakers, including Senate President Matt Huffman, who have said that if Issue 1 passes, then there would be another subsequent mm-hmm. amendment that would overturn Issue 1 that he would want to see, which I think would be really interesting if voters already weigh in on one side of it. To be asked to weigh in again might be a little bit voter fatigue. But lawmakers can't make any changes to that amendment. They would have to go back to the voters.
They have to, but they would pass laws underneath the guidance of the amendment. That's basically how it works.
Yes.
So they could pass restrictions, or they could eliminate restrictions based on what the amendment says.
And they could certainly pass laws that are in conflict with the amendment and have it go to the Ohio Supreme Court, because mm-hmm. we've seen that happen before as well.
Mm-hmm. So if it passes, what do opponents to abortion rights do? What is the talk? Have they made any plan B if issue one does pass?
I haven't really heard a whole lot of that right now. I think you're seeing the opponents of issue one really pushing very hard. I mean, you've got Governor Mike DeWine. He did an interview for our TV show, The State of Ohio, this past weekend, talking about how if issue one fails, mm-hmm. then the state will revisit the 6-week ban and go back to those exceptions for rape and incest, which he admitted that people do want. Polls show people do want that. But there's no effort right now to do that in court. My colleague Joe Ingles asked him yesterday, have you filed any paperwork? Have you done anything that shows that this is what will happen if issue one fails? And no, there's nothing been filed or put together. There's no deal on the table that says if issue one fails, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and he would need cooperation of lawmakers in the House and the Senate. And they're more conservative on this issue than perhaps, well, Governor DeWine up until this point has been very, very much opposed to abortion rights. This is a, he calls it an evolution. This is certainly, at the very least, a softening of his stance on this issue.
Well, this is this has been in the works for a while. He's been signaling this for a long time, that lawmakers needed to do something about the six-week ban because he was aware that voters had concerns about it. And so he told Joe, my colleague Joe Ingles, back in April, I think it was, that lawmakers need to revisit this ban because he saw this coming. And so now he's being a little bit more specific about that. But yeah, lawmakers have not shown any interest in changing the six-week ban and incorporating those exceptions for rape or incest. And that's part of the whole struggle within the pro-life community. Where do you draw the line on exceptions? I mean, when the heartbeat, the heartbeat bill, the six-week ban was proposed, I went back and listened to Senator Christina Rogner talking about that, saying that there should be no discrimination against, as she put it, unborn children because of the way they were conceived. So that kind of comes to the whole question of where do you draw the line? Where do you have exceptions if you believe that life begins at conception and you believe abortion is always wrong?
Are there Republicans at the State House who might be willing to move the line back from 22 weeks to, say, 15 weeks or 12 weeks? Like in Western Europe, it's 12 or 15 in most countries. You know, abortion is legal up until that point, and then the state can regulate it after 12 weeks or 15 weeks.
Well, certainly. I mean, Republicans dominate in both the House and the Senate, and so moving that back, I think, would be something that they would support. You might get some Democrats on board as well, but moving it all the way back to 6 weeks, of course, would come directly in conflict with Issue 1 if Issue 1 does pass.
Let's get back to this Senate President Matt Huffman saying if Issue 1 succeeds next week, if voters vote yes and enshrine abortion rights in the Constitution, he would come back and he would support coming back on the ballot. And lawmakers could do that much more easily than citizen groups do it. They just have to put it on the ballot. And I mean, next March is a Republican, it will be a primary, but it'll be dominated by Republicans, the U.S. Senate race. I mean, what are the chances of that, really?
That's a really good question. I think the turnout and what the vote shows next week will really inform some of that. Turnout is probably going to be pretty low compared to what it will be next November, for instance. I did an analysis of the turnout over the last, I think it was 18 odd year elections, and the average turnout is about 41-42%. So the question, I think, for Republicans who may want to put another amendment out before voters is, are you really running the risk of ticking voters off who have just voted on this? Was the turnout enough and big enough that you know that you have no chance of passing it? But then we saw again in August when lawmakers put that 60% voter approval amendment out there. They had seen that it was likely to fail and they went for it anyway.
I mean, we've already seen how fundraising, they've lagged a bit, that the opponents to abortion rights have lagged a bit in the fundraising for this vote. After raising a fair amount of money for the August vote, this vote, they're trailing considerably, the folks who support abortion rights. Who would give money to another campaign that just 4 or 5 months away?
I mean, well, there seems to be plenty of money. I mean, you see fundraising appeals for everything and everybody. And I guess that is one of the many downsides of having repeated elections over and over, especially when you're targeting the same groups of people over and over, is at some point people are tapped out. They just simply can't give anymore. And it's not that they don't want to, but they can't afford it or they don't feel that it's going to do any good.
Is there any thought at the State House, both the supporters and opponents of abortion rights, that, you know, let's let this decide it and let's move on to other issues? Are the people that, I mean, there are fervent folks on both sides. I'm not saying that, but are they saying, look, the voters have had their say, let's move on to other issues?
I don't think this is going to be the last word. I think it's pretty clear that this issue is a driving issue for both the base of the Republican Party and the base of the Democratic Party. And so this is, while it seems like this would be something that would settle it once and for all, it's a constitutional amendment. Well, we've seen before that that doesn't necessarily settle things. And so the legal challenges would certainly start.
Yep.
And there could potentially even be another ballot issue that would come forward.
Yeah, people feel very strongly about this issue. But the political reality is it fires up your voters. And it helps you raise money.
But and the point that you just made there, and I want to hit that again, too, is our primaries next year are in March, yep. not in May, because it's a presidential election. And, of course, the Republican presidential primary is going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. So,
in U.S. Senate primary.
In the U.S. Senate primary, of course. And so, gee, if you want an issue that Republicans will dominate Democrats over, is that the one? I mean, that's going to be a question.
But you have to figure that supporters of abortion rights, should it be on the ballot again, will be probably as annoyed, if not more so, than they were in the August election.
Yeah, arguably it would be the third election in a row where this is the main topic, and people get tired of it after a while.
Yeah, get tired of it. I think she is correct there. That is Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Lots of complicating factors, lots of scenarios that ultimately will be decided by voters next Tuesday and then, of course, by the Ohio Supreme Court, regardless of what happens on Tuesday. We'll be right back.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what we have not talked about here on Snollygoster for a while? House Bill 6. Remember that? The nuclear bailout, Larry Householder. As Larry Householder enjoys life in federal prison, the saga created by the House Speaker is still out there. The investigation continues, and hopefully we learn the lessons that we learned from that largest bribery scandal. WOSU Public Media next week will start dropping, is that the word, publishing? Anyway, a brand new podcast that chronicles the scandal. And it's the participants' own words. The Power Grab will take a tour of Ohio's back rooms and listen in on secret FBI recordings of schemes to wrangle power for corporate and personal profits that were at the heart of the nuclear bailout bribery scandal. It is a deep dive into the $61 million scandal. And we get to hear from the players themselves thanks to secret FBI recordings and wiretaps. WOSU reporter Renee Fox will host this podcast. She and producer Michael DeBonis will present 6 weekly episodes starting on Monday, November 6th. Welcome to Snollygoster, Renee.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Are your ears bleeding? You listened to how many hours of secret recordings?
There were hundreds of hours. I did the math the other day, and I can't really add up all the kilobytes, but it's been 1,000 hours of work time since we first got the files in May from the federal court.
So you just sat there with headphones all summer long, basically listening to Larry Householder and Neil Clark and FBI agents?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The tapes go on and on. You know, there are phone calls in there. There's these expensive dinners at fancy restaurants all over Columbus. And they really get into a lot of the dirty ins and outs of how they get things done.
It is politics in the raw. What did you learn listening to all that tape?
Well, you know, doing politics in kind of a dirty way is kind of the norm. It kind of seems like, I know we're only looking at a handful of guys here, but the way they talk to each other, you know, you get the impression that that's kind of how they talk, political operatives, when the press isn't around, when cameras aren't around, that type of thing.
So you're using these recordings and the history of this case to tell us a story. What is the story?
Yeah, we also delve into Neil Clark's book. It's a tell-all about Columbus politics.
He's the lobbyist also. He's now gone, but he died by suicide, but he was also indicted in the scandal.
Yeah, yeah. And so what we kind of hear is the FBI sends in some undercover guys. They're pretending to be developers, and they start to get to know Neil Clark working on a sports betting bill that doesn't really go anywhere for them. But while they're talking about this sports betting bill, Clark starts to talk about HB6 and what's going on with Larry Householder, and that's kind of where they get the meat of this information for the federal case against them.
And that's where the case builds, and we all know where it ended, at least for now, with the conviction of Larry Householder, the former House Speaker, and also lobbyist and former GOP Chair Matt Borges, also sentenced to a term in prison.
That's right.
The tapes are just incredible to hear. We'll highlight a couple here. One is at a dinner. What's going on there?
Yeah. This is a private dining club called Aubergine, and they're sitting around discussing women and football and things like that while they're sipping on lobster bisque. And now this is like fancy lobster bisque. They only use lobster. They use 100 pounds of it to make this bisque. But they in this clip that we're going to listen to, they're talking about Joanne Davidson. She was the Speaker of the House before Larry Householder's first stint there in 2001. And it's kind of vulgar. So.
Yeah, but we got her on the run now. She's 90 fucking 2 years old.
We got her on the fucking run.
I am going to take the biggest step on her leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Politics in hardball politics in the hardest ball.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Larry Householder will be out of prison in time to live up to that promise there, but.
You mentioned Neil Clark. We call these, it's the Householder investigation, it's the Householder tapes, we were calling them in the newsroom. But the real key player in here is Neil Clark. Yes. He was indicted, later took his own life. Key feature in this podcast, he talked a lot. And he provided a lot of evidence used to convict Larry Householder.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. They actually never tapped Larry Householder's phone for this, and they only actually get him at a dinner in front of the FBI once. But the thing is they were tapping Neil Clark's phone, and they were going to dinners with him, and so everything they got about Householder, they got through Neil Clark.
And we have an example of that tape.
Our job is to do nothing but make sure that when we have the opportunity, we beat them soundly. Kiss them in a public area. Hey, love you. You're really nice. Getting in a private environment, we kill him.
Just like Luca Brasi.
That was Larry Householder talking with Neil Clark, and your podcast is filled with snippets like that.
Oh, yeah. You'll get a real inside look at how they used dark money to fund all of this, the way the relationships all worked, who was friends with who hated who, because these guys did not all get along.
Yeah. And we have not heard these tapes because the trial was in federal court. They did not play the tapes during trial. They played them during the trial. We just couldn't hear them.
Correct.
And then they were all released at once after the trial. So this is a great way to tell the story again. It's an incredible story. You and your producer have done a wonderful job using these guys' own words to tell this story.
Yeah, we're really lucky to have Michael DeBonis on this project. He really helped pull this all together.
So look for The Power Grab wherever you get your podcast, or you can just look for it to pop up here in the Snollygoster feed. The first episode drops Monday, November 6th, and we'll drop a new one every Monday. Thanks, Renee.
Thank you, Mike.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest political move of the past 7 days. This week's pretty easy. Governor Mike DeWine, 4 years ago, with a decent amount of fanfare, signed the so-called heartbeat bill into law. That's the law that banned abortion in Ohio at about 6 weeks, with no exceptions for rape or incest. He was unapologetic in his support for that law. Now, a week before the vote on issue one, with polls showing nearly 60% of Ohioans support the Roe standard of abortion rights with exceptions for rape or incest, Governor DeWine says he has evolved. He has done a number of interviews saying the heartbeat law now goes too far and there should be an exception for rape or incest. Evolution on his position or not, it's pretty shrewd to make it known the week before voters go to the polls. So Governor DeWine gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please to be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones. I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.